Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Constitution of Liberty, the Definitive Edition, is a major work of political philosophy and political economy by F.A.A. Hayek, presented in the University of Chicago Press, Collected Works Edition, edited by Ronald Hommel. First published in 1960, the book sets out Hayek's mature account of a free society, combining legal theory, economics, intellectual history, and institutional analysis. Its central purpose is to explain why individual liberty depends not only on markets, but also on general rules, constitutional limits, and inherited practices that restrain arbitrary power. Hayek argues that freedom is valuable because no central authority can possess or coordinate all the knowledge dispersed among individuals. The book also criticizes expanding welfare state administration and the ideal of distributive justice when these require discretionary state control. The Definitive Edition is especially useful because it places the text within Hayek's broader intellectual project and includes editorial apparatus that clarifies its historical and theoretical setting. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, freedom depends on general rules rather than discretionary commands. A central argument of the Constitution of Liberty is that liberty requires government to act through general, known, and equally applicable rules. Hayek distinguishes a society governed by law from one governed by administrative discretion. In the first, individuals can form plans because rules are relatively predictable and not tailored to particular outcomes. In the second, people become dependent on the changing judgment of officials, even if those officials claim benevolent motives. This is why Hayek gives the rule of law a deeper meaning than simple legality. A command may be legal and still be destructive of liberty if it gives officials broad authority to decide who receives benefits, burdens, permissions, or penalties. The point is not that law should be minimal in every area, but that coercive power must be constrained by rules that do not single out persons or groups for special treatment. This framework explains Hayek's suspicion of policies that require case-by-case economic management. They make citizens less able to anticipate the legal consequences of their actions and shift power from stable institutions to administrative judgment. Secondly, liberty is defined by protection from coercion, not by guaranteed outcomes. Hayek's concept of liberty is built around the reduction of coercion by other people, especially coercion exercised through the state. He does not define freedom as the possession of wealth, security, or equal power to achieve every desired end. This distinction matters because many political arguments use freedom to mean capacity, opportunity, or welfare. Hayek accepts that poverty and misfortune can limit what people are able to do, but he argues that these conditions are different from being subject to another person's will. His view makes liberty a legal and institutional condition rather than a promise of equal results. This approach gives the book much of its force, but it is also one of its most debated elements. Critics, including Ronald Hommel in related scholarly discussion, have questioned whether Hayek defines coercion precisely enough and whether certain economic dependencies can be separated cleanly from coercive power. The importance of the argument lies in the boundary it draws. Hayek wants public institutions to prevent domination, but not to redesign society around preferred distributive patterns. Thirdly, free societies use dispersed knowledge that planners cannot fully possess. Although the Constitution of Liberty is not only an economics book, it extends Hayek's well-known knowledge argument into political theory. Hayek sees society as a complex order in which useful knowledge is dispersed among individuals, local practices, professions, traditions, and market signals. No central authority can gather this knowledge in complete form or use it as effectively as people acting within general rules. Prices, customs, competition, and voluntary association help coordinate plans without requiring a single directing mind. This is why Hayek connects liberty with progress. Freedom allows experimentation, and experimentation reveals information that could not be known in advance. A society that permits diverse choices may appear disorderly, but its openness allows better practices to emerge through trial, imitation, and correction. Hayek also emphasizes that many social rules are not consciously designed. Traditions, conventions, and moral habits can contain accumulated experience even when people cannot fully explain their function. His defense of liberty is therefore not merely individualistic. It is also an argument about institutional learning and the limits of rational construction. Fourthly, the welfare state becomes dangerous when social aims require unequal legal treatment. Hayek does not reject every form of public provision, but he sharply criticizes the expansion of welfare state administration when it requires discretionary allocation and the pursuit of distributive justice. His concern is that once government tries to assign incomes, opportunities, or economic positions according to a social pattern, it must treat people differently based on official judgments of need, merit, group status, or political priority. This conflicts with the rule of law because general rules are replaced by selective commands. Hayek argues that the phrase social justice is misleading when applied to the spontaneous results of a market order. Market outcomes are not distributed by a single moral agent, so they cannot be judged in the same way as deliberate rewards and punishments. This does not mean that all outcomes are morally satisfying, nor that public policy has no role in preventing severe hardship. Rather, Hayek warns that correcting every undesired result through state direction changes the character of society. It increases dependence on political authority and weakens the impersonal legal framework on which liberty depends. Lastly, constitutional democracy must limit majority power to preserve liberty. The book treats democracy as valuable but insufficient by itself. Hayek supports democratic government because it provides peaceful political change and reflects the consent of citizens. Yet he argues that majority rule can threaten freedom when it is not bound by constitutional principles. A majority may authorize policies that are arbitrary, discriminatory, or excessively interventionist. For Hayek, the central question is not simply who holds power, but what limits power faces. Constitutionalism is meant to prevent temporary political coalitions from using the state to grant privileges, impose burdens, or control economic life for particular ends. This is why the book links democracy with individual rights, the rule of law, and market coordination. Hayek's preferred order is not an unregulated absence of institutions, but a framework in which government maintains stable rules, protects property and contract, and prevents coercion while avoiding detailed direction of social outcomes. The argument gives the book a distinctive position in liberal thought that defends democracy, but only as part of a broader constitutional order that restrains both rulers and popular majorities. In conclusion, The Constitution of Liberty, the definitive edition, is best suited for readers interested in political philosophy, constitutional government, classical liberalism, economic theory, and the intellectual foundations of limited government. It is especially valuable for students and scholars who want to understand how Hayek connects law, markets, knowledge, and tradition into one theory of a free society. Policy readers will find a rigorous framework for evaluating regulation, welfare state expansion, and administrative power, even when they do not accept all of Hayek's conclusions. The practical benefit of the book is not a list of policy formulas, but a disciplined way to ask whether public action preserves general rules or replaces them with discretionary control. Compared with shorter works such as The Road to Serfdom, this book is broader, more systematic, and more philosophical. Compared with many defenses of capitalism, it is less focused on efficiency alone and more concerned with the legal and cultural preconditions of freedom. Its distinctive contribution is the claim that liberty is sustained by constitutional limits, dispersed knowledge, inherited practices, and impersonal rules working together. The definitive edition also stands out because Hamoy's editorial work helps situate the text within Hayek's larger body of thought, making a demanding classic more accessible without reducing its complexity. If you would like to support Ronald Hamoy edited by, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.